irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Writer's Block with Jim Christina and Bobby Bell, right here on LA Talk Radio.
And we are sitting here in beautiful downtown Sherman Oaks, California, in the midst of no sun.
No, and clouds, and we actually, first time, we have said, I'm not so hot. I need to put the heat on.
Low 70s all day.
Fall is in the air.
Yes, it is. It is. This is LA Talk Radio, and you're listening to The Writer's Block. My name is Jim Christina. I am your host in studio tonight with the lovely and charming and effervescent Bobby Jean Bell. Yay! Giggles.
Always glad to be here.
Oh my God, we're always glad to have you. And let's. I would want to get started because I have
yeah,
to tell
because
you,
this,
I, this author is like tremendous. So let's get started. Tonight's show is brought to you by Black Dog Publishing and Tuscany Bay Books. We are there for the new writer, the writer who is not quite sure what to do or how to do it, and we'll help you with your editing, your proofreading, your formatting, getting your book to market, getting everything done and ready to go. And also by Out West. And Out West is your online source for top brands that are a reflection of the equestrian and the Western lifestyle. Shop for unique and distinctive apparel, boots, hats, fashion, accessories, home decor, books, music, and general merchandise. National brands include Scully Leather Company, Rock Mount Ranchwear, Dan Post Boots, and American West Handbags, just to name a few. So you can give them a toll-free call at 877-340-9378. And if you're interested in their concert series, and there's only two more left for the year, their direct line there is 661-347-9700. And if you tell them that you heard it here in the Writer's Block, the tickets will magically go from $25 to $20 and possibly even
and
lower.
Possibly
depending,
even less.
Depending on how good of a mood Bobby and Jim are actually in.
Or how many people you're bringing with you.
And if you and actually go to the Almeda Bradshaw show, which is the one next month, which is the last one of the series, because me and the bookie will be there. Mm-hmm. We're looking forward to it. It's our only one this year, so we're looking forward to going to that. And Almeda was a guest here on the show, so and she was a lot of fun.
Yep.
She was a lot of fun. Since 2009, Target Freight has had a full truckload service, TFM Truckload, that's the best in the industry. Not only are they exceptionally good at what they do, but they strive to make your full truckload shipping experience unparalleled. Call TFM Truckload today at 844-653-7789. Ask for Mike Matruski and tell him you heard it here in the Writer's Block. And TFM will have a little something extra for you. And if you are an LTL shipper, which means less than full load, getting your freight moved your way the most expedient way possible is what you want. One-stop shop, no hassle. Call Target Freight Management today. Their customized traffic management movement program is the finest in the industry. So call it 888-653-1323 or go to www.targetfmi.com on the web for both truckload and LTL and call today. And we have our guest tonight is from Calgary, Alberta. She's a Canuck, eh? And if you want to call and talk to her, the number here in the studio is 818-602-4929. Again, that number is 818-602-4929. And we have on the Writer's Block tonight, we have a young lady named Sarah Johnson. She lives, of course, in Calgary with her noisy family and two slightly bewildered cats, and I'm fairly certain that they're probably a little strange as well. She runs ultra marathons. I have no idea what those are, but we're going to find out. She has a filthy mouth. God, I already love you, Sarah. And does daily battle with curly hair. She also writes fiction in a variety of genres, literary, sci-fi, fantasy, noir, horror, and once a romantic comedy that was so very terrible It should be blasted from the obelisks of recorded history. Her words are not mine. Her short stories have appeared in a number of journals and anthologies, including Room Magazine, Plentitude Magazine, the Bram Stoker-nominated Dark Visions 1A, Collection of Modern Horror, Gray Matter Press, and Year's Best Hardcore Horror Volume 2, Comet Press. Her short story collection, Suicide Stitch, was released in 2016 by EMP Publishing, and her first novel, Infractus, is coming soon. Would you please welcome to the writer's block, Sarah L. Johnson. Sarah, are you with us?
I am.
Oh, goody, goody, goody. That actually came directly off your website.
Well, we are so delighted to have you. And if you've listened to the show, you know Jim and I do tend to laugh a lot, even when we are talking with our author guests about the horror genre. We still somehow find ways to embrace it with some sense of humor, even when it's deadly serious.
We really do. We can butcher anything in this studio.
This book, Suicide Stitch, tell us a little bit about it, if you would.
So, Suicide Stitch is about 8 years' worth of short stories. I was never planning to put together a collection. I call it my accidental short story collection, because I had submitted a story to EMP Publishing for a themed anthology they were doing. And the editor rejected it because it wasn't quite right for the theme, which is fair enough. But then she sent me a really nice email saying that she hated to reject the story because she really loved it. And did I write more in that genre? Did I have more stories? Would I consider putting together a collection? And would I consider doing it with them? And so that's kind of how it all started. But yeah, 8 years of short story writing, and they all kind of ended up in this little book.
Little powerful book, right, Jim?
I would say it's probably one of the most powerful little books I've ever read. And we've read a lot of books on this show, and that one was hard to quit reading.
Yeah, as we were chatting tonight before the show started, each story captivated us, and we were asking each other questions like, well, what do you think happened at the end of this one? Or do you think that the storyteller in that was a man or a woman? Or, you know, you know how to take us through the woods and throw some breadcrumbs down for us to follow. And you sometimes let us know the story all the way through at the end. And sometimes you leave us hanging.
Sometimes we get the evidence, sometimes we don't.
Oh my goodness. What is it about writing this genre that intrigues you?
I think what intrigues me about writing speculative fiction, not just horror, but anything speculative, is that I love shaking up the rules of the world and then having to work within a new framework. And I love, especially in horror, where you have a character who thinks the world is one way, and over the course of the story, they discover that it isn't, which I think is so scary, like just finding out that everything you kind of thought was rock-solid truth isn't.
Right.
And that is the human condition, isn't it?
Right, it is,
for
actually.
Most of us. Yes, I would say yes. The first story, I think what I liked about the collection is, you know, I had done a little prep reading about the collection before I started it, and I thought, is it really going to be, you know, some of what I've read? Is it really going to be a dark, sensual, with, you know, story with just the right amount of devastating? And I, as a reader, will I be able to, you know, get through 11 stories? And you set us off wonderfully. You kind of catch us off guard, and you bring us in with the first one. Tell us just a little bit about that story, because it's charming, but sinister too.
Yeah, that story, it's called Thank You for Playing.
Right.
And that story was actually commissioned for a reading festival here in the city. It's called Reading Town, and it's in a different city in Canada every year. And they wanted, it was being held in the oldest community in Calgary, which is called Inglewood and Ramsey. And they wanted a story that could be broken into several different parts that would correspond to a walking tour through the community. And so I wrote this story, and I had spent a lot of time in that community because that's where our writing association is, but I hadn't walked all through it. And so I spent a lot of time just walking the streets, like every single street, and documenting cracks in the sidewalk and weird buildings and, you know, where trash tended to collect. And I just kind of thought, like, what, you know, someone who lives in this community and is so familiar with it, what if something unfamiliar came into play and had him starting to see his community in a new way?
Mm-hmm. Yes, and it's a great story. So I breathed this little sigh of relief as I finished that one, and I thought, okay, that was really great. Okay, I'm going to, okay.
So bad.
Yeah, the worst can't be that
okay,
bad.
Okay, I'm going to go ahead and, you know, turn the next page. you do take us through a romp through the human heart in more ways than one when we say the human heart. And we don't want to really let our listeners, we don't want to do any spoiler alerts because you want to read these stories, right, Jim? You want to read them.
Oh, yeah, you want to read them. Yeah, you definitely want to read them.
Some of them, they do have, I would say, spiritual overtones, perhaps even biblical. Not every story, but a little, you know, I found some things why I wanted to go pick up the Bible and revisit Adam and Lilith and the serpent. And I, you know, there was a couple times when I was like, oh, but I didn't want to stop reading to, you know, go get my Bible out.
Right. Besides that, she's got one of those Bibles that weighs more than she does.
So obviously you... or tell us a little bit about how faith or no faith or kind of how that impacts your writing.
So one thing I really love to write about is to take myths and folklore and like biblical canon and reimagine it, retell it. You know, if this was actually real, what would it look like? I tend to shy away from calling it spiritual or about faith because sometimes people get the wrong idea, and you wouldn't want anyone who's looking for a nice Christian book to
read. This is not Genesis. well, some of what's in the Bible is pretty horrifying, actually. But yeah, go ahead.
And I grew up in a really religious household, and I didn't think it messed me up, but I don't know. I think maybe it did. But anyway, so, you know, you grow up, you know, going to church, going to Sunday school, scripture study is like a big thing. And, you know, the church and I have since parted ways amicably. I'm not bitter or anything like that. But you still have all this stuff in your head.
Yeah, sure.
And I have to, you know, give this public service announcement and just say, like, if you're going to raise your kids religious, you need to be prepared for the possibility that they will become writers.
Golly, I should have told my mother that.
Yeah, and this is what happens. Although my parents are wonderful. They actually love the book.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, good for them. Gentle souls. I'm one of those that was raised in the Catholic faith, and I did the whole catechism in elementary school with nuns and rulers, and you know that it was an interesting upbringing. But as soon as I could run, I did. You know.
Yeah.
And you never looked back.
I actually never have looked back.
Yeah. It seems as though when you're writing the horror genre, it does cross. It crosses all kind of categories, doesn't it? Because you could take a Western and make it horror Western. You could take a romance and make... I mean, you can take it and just twist it with kind of a horror element. Would you agree with that? Is that a
absolutely
proper assumption?
And isn't that outstanding that you can take any kind of situation, any genre, and inject horror into it?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely.
Well, and some of this, Jim, as you probably discovered reading too, the horror wasn't so much graphic.
No.
You know, throughout all the stories. It's really, you're really playing with our hearts and minds.
Right. Right. Mm-hmm. You just did a great job.
I'm not a big fan of splatter horror. I mean, sometimes it has its place, but I don't think I write it very well is the problem. So it's not where sort of my instincts lead me.
Right.
Uh-huh.
Well, it's, I mean, you did it in such a way that you made us want to go to the next story.
Uh-huh.
And thinking, well, I mean, that one wasn't so bad. You know, I probably won't lose any sleep over that one.
Oh.
And then we get to a heart, and they go, oh, crap. I'm glad I read it during the day, because otherwise I wouldn't have slept.
I read that one during lunch.
Bobby read it at night.
Eating, while I was eating, actually, one day.
Oh, no way.
Yeah, well, I didn't know, you know. I read when I have my... You know, I carve out my moments to read, and I always read before I go to bed. And sometimes I have to kind of reread what I was reading right before bed, because sometimes I don't remember, you know. But that particular story that we're talking about, I was actually reading while I was having lunch. Needless to say, I didn't really eat a lot.
Didn't finish lunch.
Yeah, you put your sandwich down. I actually think that story is very romantic. Is that strange?
It kind of is,
like,
in a way, in a sick sort of way.
Well,
kind of
is. Story.
Yeah.
But it is.
Yeah. Now, Bobby had called me yesterday and kind of gave me a heads up on this story. And I said, well, after we finished our conversation, I have to go because I'm right in the middle of the story right now.
Yeah.
I actually had to go back and reread it because I got a little confused and a little, so I had to go back to the front and kind of go through it again. I got the schedule and everything was right on. So I had the program and I knew what the characters were, and I was good then.
Mm-hmm. Now, I know you also teach writing, and I would say this story that we're talking about, which is called The Beating Heart Still, I think, right?
Beating Heart Still.
Of all of the stories, and every one of them had a very strong opening paragraph. As a reader, since I am not a writer, as our audience knows, as a reader, I really have to be engaged from the get-go. And and that story, that opening paragraph, I will forever remember that opening paragraph. When you're teaching writing to your students, how do you instruct them about the craft of a short story or putting a short story together?
So short stories, I think, they're tough, you know, like there's a real art to it, you know, technique too. But one of the things you talk about, the beginnings, and often when we start to write a short story, and at least when I do, it always actually starts a little bit after I think it does. So a common thing I'll get for feedback is like, well, why do you have like these two paragraphs at the beginning, like setting stuff up, like, yeah, that's a pretty image and everything, but is it necessary? Is that the story? And I think, well, no, it's not. Let's just cut to the chase.
Right.
So, you know, it's like sort of like writing what you think it is and then looking at it critically and really just ruthlessly cutting away anything that isn't the story.
It's not necessary, yeah.
Because unlike writing a full novel, you have such little time, it's almost... Mm-hmm. Like everything has to be already developed. The characters have to, you know, they may have some change that will happen based on what happens in the story, but they're kind of fully blown. They emerge fully blown.
Right. Yeah, they're fully grown. They're already functioning human beings by the time you meet them in a short story.
Yeah.
But you only have so many pages to be able to do opening, middle, and end. Where in a novel, you have at least 280 pages to tell the entire thing and throw in other stuff.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
And that must be one of the challenges as a short story writer is really honing craft.
Right.
There.
But I also think that short stories is very important to set your stage, the first paragraph or second paragraph. So your stage is now set. So when you do introduce your characters, we don't have to go back and try to figure out where they are.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, exactly.
I've probably been totally out of my mind, but I'm okay with that.
I also always try. I'm kind of, it's a lazy thing. Rarely will I have more than two characters in a short story. It just gets to be too much. I can't keep track of these people and make them all matter. Mm-hmm.
But that makes lot of sense. I mean, that makes so much sense.
Yeah.
And reading them and going back through to prepare for tonight, and I began to kind of list the names of the characters because I don't take notes when I read. I just read. I want to just read. And and that's absolutely true. Most every story you had minimal The last story is the two sisters, and then sisters, Nate, the ex-husband, that calls in and references to a grandmother. But we mostly have one character, but we're seeing that story through her eyes, so we're getting to know the sister through her memories and stuff.
Little brother, little sister, yet.
And little brother, little sister.
Actually, four, if you want to talk about the guy's brother.
Little brother, little sister. That was quite a story.
I flew through that story. I was thinking, God, there's no more.
Yeah. Well, and you left us lots of surprises. Like, who are those little kids?
Who are
the little kids? The big kids? What would that mean? And then you kind of want to say to the main character, to Tate, you want to go like, get the heck out of there.
Move out.
And then is she going to let him go? Is the writer going to let him go? Or are we going to have like the Infinity Hotel and he's just never going to get out of there?
Yeah.
Oh.
But very well done. I applaud you. So
thank you.
Let's get
that was the one that was in the year's best hardcore horror.
Oh, was
yeah.
It?
Well,
I was surprised they took it because I'm like, well, it's not like it is. Is it even horror? I don't
yeah.
know.
Yeah.
Well, it's more supernatural.
It's more but
I suppose it would fit in the genre of horror.
Well,
I have to be careful how I say that word. Horror.
For me, it would, because I'm not someone who reads in that genre all that often.
Yeah.
Before this show, Sarah, I really never read that genre. And this show, we've read a number of things, and I have enjoyed them all. So it's taught me that get out of your comfort zone, and you're going to find great things.
Right.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
I believe in that. I read a ton, and I read broadly.
Do you?
Everything.
Well, we have
genre,
to.
Poetry, nonfiction.
Mm-hmm. We have to.
Who are some of the authors that inspire you? Who do you like to read? Who inspires you or entertains you?
Oh, who inspires and entertains me? Hanya Yanagihara, who wrote A Little Life, that was shortlisted for the Booker a couple years ago. Mm-hmm. That is a book, A Little Life, that is the book I will never recover from, I don't think. It is so powerful. In terms of like the darker stuff, the horror stuff, Gemma Files, Elizabeth Hand. For humor, I love like David Sedaris. Just from all kinds of different genres. My favorite, I'm not a real poetry person, but there's a Canadian poet named Anne Carson who I absolutely love. She's just brilliant. And it really gets me thinking about different ways of using language and word choices and phrasing. And so, it really does inform my writing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so writers need to be readers is what we're hearing here.
Yeah. Well, I mean, So when you sit down and you obviously took a long time to write Suicide Stitch, because you said it was just a series of short stories you've written over the years.
Over 8 years, I think she said.
When you sit down and you want to write, not even a short story, let's say a novel, and I know you've written a few, what motivates you to sit down and get into that book?
For writing it?
Yes.
Well, usually I'll have a sort of situation and a character.
Mm-hmm.
And I will sit down and I will write, if it's a novel, I might write a few pages. If it's a short story, I might write a few paragraphs. And then I don't know where it's going. I have the character, I have kind of the setup, I have the voice, the narrative voice, and I just don't know what the story is. So it'll go in a drawer for a long time. I'm a really slow writer. It takes me a long time to finish stuff. So, it kind of, so it's sitting in a drawer and I'm not doing anything. I'm on the page, but it's always in my head and I'm always thinking about it. And so I might take it out like a year or 2 years or even 3 years later and look at it and think, okay, now I know what the story is, because it's just been tumbling around somewhere in my brain for all that time.
Sure, in one of those hundreds and hundreds of miles you run.
Yeah.
I can't believe you do that. I don't even know what extreme running is, but I do know that I wouldn't do it.
Let's see. Have you ever considered writing under a different name or under a pseudonym as a woman writing this type of fiction?
Mm-hmm. Not seriously. Well, actually, you know, I joked about it a couple of years ago that I was having a discussion with a friend about sexism in the horror genre, in the horror writing and publishing community. And I thought, if I ever write, like, a book under a male pseudonym, I already have it all figured out. It's going to be like a dude book for bros about, like, beer and trucks. And my author name is Steve Widestance.
Steve what?
Steve Widestance.
Widestance. Oh, we're going to be looking for a story with a character that named that.
What is your favorite genre to write in?
It's hard enough to build up like a presence under one author name. I can't imagine trying to do it with more. I know people do it though.
Oh yeah, all the time.
Like a few different pen names they use.
Yeah, like we're having a guest on our show in April of next year, John Sanford, who is he's a huge author. He writes all the Prey novels and all kinds of stuff. You go to an airport, if you don't see a John Sanford novel, you're in the wrong airport. But that's John Sanford's a pseudonym, or is a nom de plume.
Does he write under other names too?
He writes under John Sanford. His real name is something totally different.
Interesting.
So, but I mean, I don't know why you couldn't do it. Nobody would ever know.
I've published erotica under like just my initials. Uh-huh. I don't know why I did that. I don't know. But I've since sort of come to realize that I just need to stick with my name, and that's it.
That's actually a genre we've never had on this show.
No, we might have to have you back.
Oh, yeah. Well, I don't know. Like, what are you allowed to say on
this? Oh, this is LA Talk Radio. What do we say? We can be irreverent. Isn't that our tagline?
That's right. I'd say we say what we want.
Yeah, we say what we want.
Let's just say that there are other horrifying stories that are not in this collection.
I get that.
When you write, and you were just sharing a little bit about how you have the character in a circumstance or situation, when does the reader come into play as you're writing? You know, are you thinking about the reader, or is the story just has to get out, you know, and then, I don't know how to phrase that question, but it's obviously a relationship between writer and reader. Can you talk to that a little bit?
Well, especially with short stories demand more from a reader, so you really have to respect the reader. Not when you're writing a rough draft, because you're just trying to, that's the downdraft, you're just trying to get the story out, trying to learn what the story is. But as you rewrite, you really have to keep the reader paramount in your mind, because you're already demanding a lot of them from a short story, because you can't give them as much information, you can't go on as many segues, and you have a shorter amount of space, and especially in a collection, because, you know, like just my book, for example, you're asking a reader to dive into 11 different worlds, and that's not a small ask, so you have to treat them right.
Yeah, you're asking him to suspend reality.
Mm-hmm. 11 times.
11 times.
Instead of like one time for 300 pages.
I think that's part of the horror genre, is that you do ask the reader to suspend reality for the length of time it takes them to read the book. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying normal novel, but a novel that is not in the horror genre, mystery, you don't really have to suspend reality, because that stuff happens all the time.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think Gabriel comes in everybody's or the Archangel Michael comes in everybody's living room and, you know, cuts heads off.
Just that one.
Just that one. One particular one, yeah. But, you know.
Not on like a Thursday.
Like a Thursday.
I think that's Friday night activity.
Yeah. But I think that, you know, suspending your sense of reality for even a short time, short story, whatever, you know, it's your basic aim.
Right. Of course, short stories have been around forever, as long as there have been writers and readers, but it would feel that today when we're texting and we're talking in short jargon and we want micro bites of information, that as readers we almost maybe would enjoy short stories that we can read in one sitting, you know, and put down and pick up again when we, you know, when we have the next moment.
Right.
Instead of, oh my gosh, oh, where was I? Oh, I got to go back, you know, four chapters to figure out where I was when I first last put the book down. Do you have that sense at all in sort of in the publishing world and all, that there's more of a demand for short story writers and anthologies of collections?
Did we lose you?
Uh-oh. Oh, no.
Sarah, did we lose you? Apparently, we either pissed her off or we lost her. Or we lost the connection.
My question was too long. Oh.
Oh, there you are.
There you are.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can.
Yeah, we can hear you.
You've actually kind of been breaking up a little bit, so.
So I work in a bookstore, and from a reading perspective, no one is reading short stories. It's we don't bring a lot in. We don't sell. The ones we do bring in, we bring in because, you know, I've read them or another coworker has read them and thought they were so good, and we're like, okay, we're going to hand sell this. We're really going to push this. But most readers are just, nope.
That's interesting.
And I think it is because there is that demand. Like with a novel, you're just asking a reader to fall into one world, one set of characters.
Right.
Short stories, you're asking more.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. Now, do you think that there are anthologies, genres of anthologies, i.e. war, horror, whatever, that are more accepted or are or better accepted by the public than others?
You're going to get me in trouble.
No, no. That's not our goal.
That's a hard thing. I think maybe when you're looking at... I think it depends on what group you're targeting. I mean, writers read short stories. So if there's an anthology of like prize-winning stories or from like really big, like anthologies that have a lot of really big names, like if I see a horror anthology with like, you know, Stephen King and Peter Straub and Anne Rice and, you know, like all these different names that I makes recognize sense. That's probably gonna get people's attention a bit more.
Right.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
So you do work in a bookstore. Congratulations. We love that.
We do.
We just love that.
Thank you. I love it too.
Yeah. And tell us a little bit about your specific things that you're responsible for there.
I am the literary events manager at Owl's Nest Books, which is Calgary's oldest independent bookstore. So my job is to connect the writing community to the reading community through literary events. And it's a whole lot of fun. I've met so many cool writers. I have gotten to see people come into events and discover a new author that it turns out they love. It's a really gratifying job to do. It's really tough for someone who's an introvert like I am because it's very draining, but it's so worth it. It's wonderful.
Well, and then to be with an independent bookstore, boy, we really need, you know, we need bookstores of all kinds. We don't want to see any bookstore close its doors.
That's true. Very, very true.
Our community has just won, you know.
They really are.
Yeah. So for an independent to be thriving and have a long history, that's just fabulous. And we would encourage all readers everywhere, if you got a local bookstore of any size, please go and shop there.
Give Amazon a break. Go pick up the book.
Go pick up the book. Go talk to a staff member for their favorite picks. Go to a literary event where you can feed your soul.
Right.
Because it is more than just the words on the page
that
get delivered to your door.
Right.
It's about the culture within that wonderful, thriving environment.
Yeah. And author events are always a lot of fun because you get to sit and talk to the authors and kind of pick their brains and get to know actually who they are and, you know, where they come from.
Yeah. Is there any type of literary event that you've run, you know, that's been more popular than others? If we were thinking that we would want to do a popular literary event, would you give us a clue what to do?
Yeah, so multi-author events are a lot of fun. Getting a few different authors together, you get more people coming into the store, and there's just usually like a really festive energy about it, and you're kind of getting to sample a bunch of different things instead of just one. And actually, I'll give you an example. This past Valentine's Day, we ran an event called Bloody Offensive, because we had a multi-author event, and the fellow, one of the readers, his name is Axel Howerton. He's a local author as well, fantastic guy, good writer. But he said, I usually go last because I'm the most offensive. And I thought, okay. Like, it just sort of planted the seed of an event. So Valentine's Day, like a lineup of completely sordid, irreverent, graphic readings, and it was a wild success.
How bad?
So did it?
There was pantslessness.
Yeah. So was it? Did it last? You know, for several hours in the afternoon. Were there speakers, or did you know? How did you plan it? What was some of what went on?
So, yeah, we promoted it as the Valentine's Day date night for people who hate Valentine's Day.
Oh, I love it.
Love it.
It was in the evening. We had cocktails. We had goodies.
Oh, yeah.
And we had two readers do their pieces. Then we had a break. And then we had the other two readers. And then there was just lots of time for just socializing, which is always really important to include that.
For sure.
Yeah.
For people. About.
I have to tuck that idea away.
Are you going to have another one next year?
We certainly are.
Calgary's not that far.
Any excuse besides the stampede,
I
of course.
Not that cold in February.
yeah. February, well, a little cold, but. But being a writer apparently you how often do you actually sit down and write?
Some writers write every day. I don't. I have three kids and a job, and I teach, and often as not, I'll choose to read instead of write. So, probably every other day, I do at least a little bit.
Yeah, I'm finding that to be.
But
quite
I don't.
Difficult.
I don't have like daily word count quotas or anything like that.
Yeah, we had a writer in here that
maybe I should.
his goal was 10,000 words a week. Was that Ken?
So, yeah, Ken. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, 10,000 words a week, and he took Fridays off. So, it was like
holy smokes!
Yeah, 2,500
like
words a day.
10,000 good words.
I guess. Well, you could say and
yeah.
You know, just hit repeat 10,000 times. But no, he does. He does 10,000 words a week. Well, 4 days.
I'm in awe of people who can write that quickly. And you know, people are like, yeah, my goal is to put out a book a year. And I'm just thinking, my goal is to put out a book.
Yeah. Well, my last one was, 9 months? So, it was a while.
Mm-hmm.
It was a while.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But this show is called The Writer's Block. Now comes the big question. Have you ever had writer's block? Well, obviously you have it like for years at a time, but if you do, how do you get out of it? And if you don't, I don't have it.
Do you even believe in it?
Yeah, that's the thing. I could say I don't believe in it, but like just for the sake of naming what it is, you know, we'll say writer's block is a thing. It's when you just feel like everything's getting in the way of writing. And how I deal with it is I try to be honest with myself. It's like, okay, am I afraid of something? Am I afraid I'm writing badly? Or is what I'm writing about bothering me? Like in the case of the title story, Suicide Stitch. I have a sister. We're very close. My brain just didn't want to go to that place.
Uh-huh.
And I got quite agitated when I tried. So it took me a long time to write that story. Uh-huh. I had to do it in a lot of little bits.
Mm-hmm. That's a powerful story. Yeah.
It's boring too, but a lot of times there are things I'd rather be doing. Like, I want to, you know, binge 13 Reasons Why on Netflix. So I think being honest with yourself is like the key to getting through writer's block. Because there's always a reason. There's always a reason why you're not getting your butt in the chair and you're not, you know, putting words on the page.
Mm-hmm. We can always come up with a reason.
Yeah. Did you always write?
Yeah, but like an honest reason.
Ah.
Did you always write even as a young, you know, youngster? Were you writing?
No. No, I did not. I was slow to learn to read. I remember being in grade 2 and pretending to read when we were supposed to be having silent reading time. And so, but when that comprehension piece finally did fall into place, it awakened a monster in me, and like I just could not get enough of stories and books, and not much has changed since then. So I've just been consuming books like crazy my whole life, but never doing any writing of my own until I guess I was about 30, 31 when I started writing myself and writing my own stories. And so in that way, I could say, no, I wasn't writing at all, but I think I kind of was. Mm-hmm. Like I said, these things have been in my head and just kind of rolling around.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. And you have 3 kids, right?
I do.
Any of them seeming to have the itch to write or writing now?
Thankfully, no. I wouldn't wish this on anyone.
So maybe when they're 30, huh?
Yeah.
Maybe. Yeah, we'll see.
What are you reading right
later
now?
In life.
Yeah, that's a great question, Jim. What are you reading right now?
What am I reading right now? Mm-hmm. I am reading an advanced reading copy of a book called The Visitors, and I wish I could remember who wrote it. It's a woman, and it's about a shut-in who lives with her brother, who is a very domineering man, and she keeps hearing screaming and voices coming up from the cellar, and she's never been down there. She's always been told she can't go down there. And I just started the book, but already I'm just absolutely riveted, and I can't wait for bedtime because that's when I get to read and like really fall into the book.
I understand. I'm with you.
Yeah.
It sounds like something we'll need to read, Jim.
Well, you know, that way, yeah. Bobby and I communicate at really odd hours of the day.
And
it's like, yeah. I get up, I just wake up naturally around 3 or 3:30, and I'll go and I'll send her an email, and she's up, but she hasn't gone to bed yet. But I get an immediate response, like, whoa! She's up reading.
Yeah. Yeah, sometimes I just stay
another
up.
Thing.
Yeah.
So another thing I really like, I like to read the No Sleep on Reddit. Like if I'm just feeling like reading something short or whatever, I'll go to like find the list of people's favorite No Sleep stories, and I'll go on there and, you know, lose 3 hours of my life and even more hours of sleep.
Oh, I anytime you go on the internet, you lose 3 hours. I mean, that's just a gimme.
I know.
Yeah,
time vortex.
But it's just, I mean, it's great for research, but good Lord. You can get lost.
At what cost?
Did you have any training in school and with a degree on any creative writing courses?
No. I was always like really in the science academically. Like that was always my focus. But the math and science. I mean, I was also in band, but you know, how else is a girl like me going to get friends? But being in the band
or the choir. Or both.
But no, I actually wasn't interested in writing. English I enjoyed just because I liked reading and studying and discussing the books. But when it came to writing the papers, I was much more tepid in my enthusiasm. After I did start writing in my 30s, I decided if I'm going to do this, I want to do it right. And so I joined a local writing organization called the Alexander Writers, and I just took tons of classes and workshops and had consultations with writer in residence, you know, through the library, through the university. And I really studied my ass off trying to learn everything I could, and I wrote a lot in that time.
Yeah, that's actually one of the best ways to do it.
Do you? Mm-hmm. I know that you. Is the next book out already, Sarah, or is it coming?
No, it's not. It's It's coming soon.
Can you tell us anything you would want to share about it or not?
Limited, limited, of course.
If you like Suicide Stitch, if you like dark, twisted, weird stuff, you'll like my novel. It's called Infractus, and it's kind of this, I call it the Bourne Identity meets the Book of Revelation.
Oh, my
gosh. So it's a nameless assassin teams up with the Archangel Michael to destroy an oppressive global regime.
It's going to require a Bible, isn't it?
Well, that's probably what's going to be required to save us if we can be saved.
Yeah. And of course, as I do in my short stories, I, of course, take all this biblical lore and just toss it right on its head.
Uh-huh.
Like, nothing.
Well, and it's time that that be done, probably. Do you have an agent? Last week we talked a lot about literary agents, non-agents, publishing, indie publishing, traditional publishing. It sounds as like you had an agent or an editor that you worked with on Suicide Stitch. Do you have an agent or not?
I don't have an agent. I traditionally published Suicide Stitch through EMP Publishing, but I wasn't working with an agent at that time. I just worked directly with the editor, and so I haven't had experience with an agent. I think that's something I want to pursue fairly soon, maybe my next book.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, I love small presses. Like you got to take the bad with the good, but you know, small presses are like, they take these risks and they keep fiction dangerous, and that's what I love about them.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
We like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like, I think Suicide Stitch would have been a pretty tough sell to a mainstream publisher.
Oh, yeah.
Well, you know, last week, Jeff MacArthur kind of compared independent publishing a little bit to film, you know, and the independent film you know, and that, and I thought that was a really good way to think about the two. Independent publishing is like the independent filmmaker that are doing things that the big guys
don't want to do. Right.
Yeah.
Well, we're going to have to say.
I think the big.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Sorry?
Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, I think the big difference between film and publishing is that whether you're an indie or a traditionally published author, it's really still up to you.
Right.
Your publisher, like, generally doesn't do a lot to promote your book. It's really up to you to get it out there.
Well, yeah, and that's the deal with, and a lot of writers don't get that. You know, they figure if they go to a publishing house, be it small or press or large press, they, you know, I don't have to do anything now because they're going to do it for me. No, they're not.
Yeah.
They all require you to shamelessly self-promote now.
Yeah,
and that's what we call it. Hey, we're gonna have to say goodbye to you. Unfortunately, it's been a fun 50 minutes. Can you give our listeners your email address and where they can find you on the web?
Where I live, a picture of my house.
No.
On the web. Facebook.
Well, unless you want to.
I mean, yeah, if you want to send it to us, we'll publish it.
You can find me on my website, sarahljohnson.com.
Mm-hmm.
There will be links to all my social media. I'm on Twitter quite a bit. Please say hello to me. I love talking to people. In fact, I think it's a shame that people don't talk with each other as much on Twitter as it seems they used to. So I think we need to take it back. More conversation.
Well, that's because we have somebody that uses it for other purposes now.
Yes, well, my condolences.
Yes, I know. Well, thanks for joining us, sir. It's been fun, and you've been a great guest, and we just loved having you and loved your
thank
book.
Thank you for having me.
And please post on the Writer's Block Facebook page whenever you have something compelling or interesting to share, especially as the new book becomes available or you have a new story that's published somewhere.
Right.
We'd love to have our guests use our Facebook page as a place to share their thoughts and inspirations and such.
Or just call us on a Thursday night.
Oh, yeah, or call us on a Thursday night.
We're here.
Yeah, we'll answer the phone.
We're here. The Facebook page address
is... I will definitely do that.
The Facebook page address is Writer's Block Radio Show.
Mm-hmm.
So that'll get you right to us on Facebook. And thanks again for joining us.
Good.
It's been a hoot. And we appreciate your time.
You.
Go read something scary.
And keep writing.
Always keep writing.
Thank you, I will.
Okay, thanks, Sarah.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Bye-bye. Bye. Sarah Johnson.
That book was just riveting.
I know.
I'm still thinking over some of the stories. And
wow.
Yeah, have to revisit them because wow. I have these questions on some of them. And I don't think the answers are there, but maybe if I read it again with fresh eyes.
Well, next week, which is your last week.
My last week for this month.
For this month.
Yeah.
Is author Kim Howe. She's written a book called The Freedom Broker.
Yes, and it's good.
It is really good.
It's really good.
It started out really wonderful.
Yeah, it did. It did.
And so, Kim, if you're listening or if you do happen to listen to this broadcast, yay.
Yeah,
good
I'm
job.
Enjoying it.
Good job. It's a ballsy woman.
I'm hoping I can get all the way to the end because I know I'm going to want to know how everything
I
gets
know,
resolved,
huh?
But it's a little longer than...
I find myself trying to cheat going to the last... You know,
No,
I don't do it.
We have to read every word.
I know, huh?
Mr. Christina, every word.
I do, actually. And just a teaser for the very near future, we have two exciting new authors, to the show. Bianca Murray, her book, Hum If You Don't Know the Words, is about her growing up in South Africa as a young child during the apartheid era. And as we mentioned earlier, John Sanford, author of the Prey books, Virgil Flowers, and many more. I believe he has one out called The Night Crew, which is a great story about a nighttime news crew that goes and cruises in a van. It's a wonderful story. It's a good book.
Good premise.
They're on in April, and we're looking very much forward to having them on the show with us. And other than that, Mrs. Bell, another Thursday is gone.
And another book to read.
And another book to read for next week. So that's going to be it for us tonight. This is LA Talk Radio. You're listening to The Writer's Block, and we are out of here.